Listening to the Grilling Truth.
Welcome to the Grilling Truth NFL Legend Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, a new football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. So check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. I'm your host, as always, for the Legend Show, Mike Goodpaster. Our guest tonight was a standout at Iowa State in the late 1970s, went on to play for over a decade in the NFL, most notably with the Houston Oilers from 1979 through 1985. Help me welcome to the Grilling Truth Legend Show, Mike Stensrud.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be on.
Oh, it's great to have you on. Like I said, we've had five or six former Houston Oilers on, and, I mean, you guys are always really talkative, number one.
Well, you know, it was a different era in football. It was a time when you knew you had to get the job done, but you also had a lot of fun doing it. So it was, and then we had a coach, Bum Phillips, that gave the environment of just that itself, is having fun. You knew when you had to get the job done. You knew when you had to work, but you also had fun doing it. So, I mean, almost all of the credit goes to Bum Phillips.
All right. I did a little bit of research on you today, and the one thing I found out was your first love was farming with your dad. Tell us a little bit about that and when you started playing football.
You know, I guess you can say my career in the NFL was kind of an enigma. I never dreamt of playing football from when I can remember, put it that way. I always wanted to farm, and I was all through high school and college. I actually farmed with my uncle, helped my uncle, and a guy named Harold Hagen, too. Just my love was farming. And I almost didn't take my scholarship when I went to Iowa State. I was talking with my dad, and I said, I don't want to go to play football. I said, I want to farm. And I had the opportunity to do that with my uncle, but my dad said, no, you're going to go get an education. And it's just funny how life takes you in different directions that you think you're going to go. It was a pleasurable experience. I can say to this day, really, if I had to do it over again, I'd rather have gone farming with my uncle, but, you know, it opened up a lot of doors, that I guess isn't there for, I guess, the non-football player. It was fun. But like I say, it really wasn't my first love.
Yeah, you talked a little bit about high school football. We talked a little bit off air. You brought up your high school coach. You want to talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, I had a very, very good high school football coach. His name was Chuck Nickel, and he was a guy that, you know, a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times in high school football, you get coaches that just want to be there, and they love football, but they don't put their heart into it like they should. Chuck Nickel was one that lived and breathed football and really enjoyed it. Actually, he enjoyed all sports, but his love was football. He was a master technician. I mean, he taught us so much more than football. He taught us about life, too. And he just was one of those guys that, very unique individual. He knew football. He knew how to get everything out of you. The proverbial, you know, you'd run through a big brick wall for this guy. I mean, there he stands with Bum Phillips. Those are two coaches that you'd run through a brick wall. You know, if all coaches could be like those two, it would really, really make a difference in sports, I think.
Yeah. Now, your coach when you get to Iowa State was Earl Bruce, who I think was a coach that was underrated. I mean, went to Ohio State. They fired him because he only won 10 games a year. You want to talk about a little bit about your time at Iowa State with Coach Bruce?
Yeah, and I want this clear up front. I mean, I was a guy that started off at Iowa State, and I was searching. You know, I was a guy that, I guess just because of talent, was very good at the high school and college level. And I am sorry for the way I reacted to a lot of situations at Iowa State. I was one of the boisterous team's spokesmen. You know, they would get Mike to say it, he'll say it to the coaches. And I really regret that now. You know, if I'd have been Earl Bruce, I'd have come up to me and I'd have said, Mike, shape up or you got to go. And, you know, that's kind of the player I was at Iowa State. I don't speak of that in a proud way. Like I say, as I look back on it, I would change an awful lot the way I acted at Iowa State. But be that as it may, Earl put up with me, and you know, glad he did. Earl was, I kind of define Earl as a coach that he loved you, he wanted the best for you, and he was a very good coach. He surrounded himself with outstanding coaches, and it's just sometimes he didn't really go about it the way the players wanted to, and you know that. You're never going to as a coach, but like I say, as I look back on it, there's a lot of things I would do over again, a lot differently. You know, we had good teams, we really did, and Earl Bruce was responsible for that. So from that aspect, it was fun. The most notable was that we beat Nebraska back to back, and one of those was down there in Lincoln, Nebraska. So that sticks out.
Yeah, plus back-to-back bowl games, which I don't think that's happened too often in Iowa State.
Yep. It, like I say, it was a lot of fun, but I won't say it again. There was a lot of turmoil caused by me that I wish I could change.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's anybody past the age of 30 that doesn't have something they wish they could have done differently when they were younger. But
yep.
What were your first thoughts when you found out that you were drafted by the Oilers? I mean, was it something where by the time you got to the end of your college career, you wanted to play in the NFL, or were you still wanting to go back to the farm?
You know, I like I say, life takes you sometimes places where you don't think you're going to go. And I think that was me with football. I really didn't appreciate this sounds arrogant, but I don't mean it to be. I didn't appreciate the talent I had in football. I always poo-pooed it, and therefore I didn't really put the effort into it that I really should have. I didn't start lifting weights until my third year into the pros, and I look back on all the players that I played with that had strong lifting programs at their college and then continued that on in their pros. Again, I there's a lot of things I do differently, but it's interesting where life takes you.
Yeah. Well, you get to the Oilers. I mean, like I said before, what was your first thought being drafted by them? I mean, they were a team that had played in the championship game the year before. They had some guys that were great defensive linemen like Curly Culp, Elvin Bethea. What was your first thought headed there?
You know, I was glad. I was, you know, overjoyed that I'd been drafted by them. And probably at that time, mostly for the money, you know, even as I look back on it now, though, the money was, boy, what a difference today makes. But I'll give you a good example. You know, my dad worked at Winnebago Industries, and he was a welder there, and he made about $15,000-$16,000 a year. And my first contract, my rookie year, I made $30,000. So, I mean, it was about double, you know, what a factory worker would make. So, I mean, yeah, the money was real good. But, this was about 15 years ago. I was at the lumberyard where I worked with my brother-in-law for 20 years after football. But I just calculated up. I could have made, 15 years ago, I could have made in 11 games what I made in 11 years, you know, if I'd have played at that time. So, I mean, the money was real good. But, and that's probably what spurred me on to, you know, to go after it. And then I had a really good coach actually Bum's son, Wade Phillips, was my position.
That was my next question, actually.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he just now got a lot of, you know, credit for the Denver Broncos winning the Super Bowl. I think he's a guy that's been overlooked like his dad was. So what was
Absolutely.
It like working with Wade?
Oh, I couldn't have asked for a better coach my rookie year, my first 2 years in the NFL. He sat me down in 1980, my second year, and he said, Mike, you know, you can do a lot of things if you'll just start putting your mind to it. And that's what kind of woke me up that, you know, if I'm going to do this, I should give it my best and give it my all. And that's when I really got into it, started studying football, started to really take time and working through the game plan, you know, lifting weights, putting the effort into really what a professional football player should. And if it hadn't have been for Wade Phillips, I think I'd have just squandered and turned my wheels and probably wouldn't have lasted all that long.
All right. Now, when you got there, I mean, like I said, had a lot of veterans, great players. Did any players kind of take you under their wing when you got there?
Yeah, there was a guy named Carl Mock. And this is what I really appreciate about Bum Phillips. He had a lot of older players. Bum Phillips did not have many rules. He didn't have curfew. He hardly ever talked football to us. He let the assistant coaches do that. And like I say, he had good assistants too. But he was just a man that appreciated you as a man. He didn't treat us as kids. But what he did was he counted on his older players to keep the younger players in line. And I look back on it, a guy named Carl Mock, he was our center, just an old crusty guy that right out of the 50s. And guys like him, and they took care of us younger guys. When we would start getting out of line, it wasn't the coaches that had to discipline us. The older guys, took care of us and said, hey, you don't know what you have here. Get going. Get working at it and stay in line, and I think that's what made Bum Phillips so special was he counted on his players to not run the team, but to keep the team in line. And that went an awful long way with everybody, all the players. And it showed. I mean, it showed in the way that they respected Bum Phillips. They respected the way he did things. And, they wanted to perpetuate the atmosphere that Bum put forth with us.
Yeah, because the more he invests in you guys, the more he trusts you guys to take care of that stuff, the harder you fight because you want to prove him right.
Right, exactly. He would start off every team meeting, like I say, not talking so much about football, but talking about life. And this is what you got to do to be a man. This is the way a man would handle situations. And like I say, he rarely did talk football. He wanted to mold us into guys that I guess would be respectable in the community. Now we did have some rounders, myself included, but it was a feather in his cap the way he handled, miscreants like me and a few others, and it just worked out. It just is one of those unique situations that worked out.
All right, so we get to the 1979 season, your rookie season. I mean, the Astrodome, the Love You Blue, the old Houston Oilers song. What was the atmosphere like in Houston then at the Astrodome, and what was the atmosphere around town when you guys were just out?
I don't think there's anything or a team ever that can be compared to the atmosphere that we had as the Oilers. We could do no wrong. And that's both good and bad. You walk into a restaurant and you rarely paid per meal. I was talking with Earl here, a couple of years ago, and Earl Campbell, to those who don't know. But anyway, I was talking with him, and we were reminiscing about the good old days, the Lovey Blue days. And he would have guys. He'd be in a restaurant, and he'd have guys that would come in and ask if they could buy him dinner. And so he'd ask them to sit down, they'd have dinner with them. And I mean, these guys are loaded, and they'd take off their gold Rolex watches and give to Earl just to be around, I mean, so you kind of lived in a pseudo world of kingship, I mean, it was very hard my first couple of years not to get caught up in that. And you soon begin to think that, man, I'm something, I really am. And it took me a couple of years to finally realize and grow up that, I'm not king, and there are other things to life, and not everybody recognizes you as some great hero. There are other things to life, but that was very difficult to overcome, was that, we really couldn't do anything wrong. And like I say, some of it was positive. Or had a good side effects to that. A lot of it, if you didn't have good grounding, it could tear you down pretty quick too. So, because like I say, you got a excessive self-worth. You begin to think that you're really worth more than what you are.
Yeah, I mean, the way TV glamorizes football way more than what it should. I mean, how hard was it to keep a level head and keep everything in perspective?
Well, as I said, I didn't do a very good job of it my first couple of years,
Yeah,
and
but I mean, you seem to, after that though, I was just, what was the difference? Was there any like moment where it dawned on you, hey, this isn't as big a deal as I've made it up to be in my head?
Well, I'm glad I had the moorings of my mom and dad and my family. My dad was one of always that don't think more highly of yourself than you should. Think of yourself, in a right way. And it's those teachings that finally came back, biblical teachings that finally came back to, I guess, set me straight. And, still have a long way to go. Even at 60 years old, I still got a long way to go. But, I contribute, I guess, starting to think the way a guy should. I contribute that mostly to my mom and dad, but also to Bum, to Wade. Wade was, it's just hard to put into words how he brought you back to reality and yet made you still feel special.
Well, we go 1979 season. You guys played a really physical playoff game with Denver. You lose Kenny Burrow, your number one wide receiver. You lose Dan Pastorini, your starting quarterback. You lose Earl Campbell. You're going to San Diego, a team that, if they're not the favorite to win the Super Bowl, they're up there. To me, it was one of the greatest playoff upsets in NFL history. You want to talk a little bit about what Bum did mindset-wise to prepare you guys to go in and win that game?
Well, this is, I guess this is where you'd call me an anomaly. As I look back on my football career, I got a very good friend that I helped farm with, Doug Kingland, and he remembers almost every play of football that I was involved in. I look back on my career, and I can only remember a handful of plays that really stick out. Like I say, one of them was beating Nebraska down in Nebraska. A couple of others were playing Pittsburgh. But I don't know if it's because of my lackadaisical attitude towards football at that time. I don't have a really good recall of a lot of things that a guy should. I have to admit I was more interested in partying than I was in anything else, and it I guess what I remember most is that Bum had a unique way of preparing us, and there again it came back to if you didn't have the attitude that you were going to give everything you can to the team, especially Bum Phillips, the older guys got on you, and so. I don't have anything that really sticks out in my mind particularly, except just the general attitude of is that we're going to go beat them. It doesn't matter the adversity that came that week. We were going to go out and we were going to beat them. And we did, and so, I mean, it's I guess it's a great testimony to just the way we were prepared as a team and not individuals.
All right. You talked a little bit about the Steelers. You want to talk about that rivalry, one of the fiercest in NFL history?
It's real strange that one. That one there is that we would beat them up in Pittsburgh, and they'd come down to Houston and beat us. And so we would even up the games during the season, and then unfortunately in the playoffs, they got us. But I still say going back and I jest in this with a lot of my friends. I said that's why I hate refs. The one play with Mike Renfro, it bothers me today in the sense of, it was so obvious. And then the time it took for the ref to sit there and confer about it and still get it wrong. I can't say that we would have gone on and won that game, but we were that close to getting to the Super Bowl, and things like that do make an impact on you. Yeah, it was a great rivalry. They had a fantastic team. They were well coached too, and just a great organization. So, I mean, it was a lot of fun. The jawing back and forth with Bradshaw and a few of the players and Webster, and that was one thing I didn't relish, was having to go up against Webster. But it just was a really good old fashioned rivalry. Yep.
So was Webster the toughest offensive lineman you ever had to face?
No, he wasn't. Dwight Williams. I mean, not Williams. Dwight Stevenson.
I knew you were talking about the Miami Dolphins center.
He was by far the toughest guy I ever went up against. He had a knack of getting into your legs, and he just was, to me, he was outstanding football player. He didn't get the recognition he deserved, but yeah, that's not to take away from Mike Webster and that. I seem to have good games against Mike Webster, but some of the other players I didn't. So.
All right. Now, you played with some great players on your defense, Curly Culp, Elvin Bethea, Robert Brazil, who's been on the show. You want to, any stories you want to share with those guys, about those guys?
Well, nothing I can say over the radio. So.
You can. It's all right. I'll just tag it explicit on the recording, and we'll be good to go.
No, I mean, they were Curly Culp was a guy that had a humongous heart, but he came across, and you had to get to know him to get to see that heart. He came across as a burly bear, and he played like it. But what a great guy, you know. Robert Brazil, it's a shame if he does not get into the Hall of Fame. You know,
it is criminal. I mean, if you watch, because I know when I did the research, I remembered Robert anyways. One of the great. I think he's one of the two or three best outside linebackers in history. And if you watch his highlight films from like 77, 78, 79, 80, and then you watch Lawrence Taylor's highlight films, it looks like the same guy.
Right, exactly. And like I say, it's a shame. And you know, I'm glad that shows or that guys like you are finally, I shouldn't say finally, that and because you have recognized that, but he is getting at least some recognition that he so well deserves. And he just was a great guy. He was a rounder too, but I mean he loved the game. And it showed. I mean, he just had a fun time playing football, and he put his all into it, and one of the greatest, in my opinion.
All right, so let's get this straight then. You keep talking about the rounders, so does that mean that North Dallas 40 movie was correct?
No comment. we had guys like J.C. Wilson and Greg Stemmerich. Fantastic ball players. In fact, J.C. Wilson, pound for pound, he was about 160 pounds, 159, 160, dripping wet. And he was the hardest hitting football player I've ever played with. And Pete Johnson from Cincinnati, 280-pound fullback. I remember he ran an off-tackle play, and J.C., who was coming in, closing in, containing him, and he hit Pete Johnson and just leveled him, you know, and Pete had 120 pounds on him. And that is one play that I keep going over and over in my mind, because it just, the guy was nuts, you know, and he when I speak of rounders, you know, he probably, how do I say this gently here, didn't conform to all the rules, you know, but just a genuinely nice guy, fun to be around, loved to call him brother, but what a football player, you know. And so, you know, that's some of the things that stick out.
All right, so what do you remember about 1980? You guys lose the wild card to the Raiders. What do you remember about Bum leaving and the effect it had on the team?
It was devastating, and a lot of it was the way it was done. And first of all, I should say it shouldn't have been done. You know, we had an owner I don't know. I can't get into his mind. I still don't have no clue. A lot of people don't have any clue why he got rid of Bum. We all don't understand it. You know, just as anything. Whether it be football or whether you work at a factory, politics enters in. And somehow some guys got in, was politicking against Bum for whatever reason, self-interest probably. And that week after the season for us anyway was very eye-opening to me as a young guy. It goes back to like Robert Brazil not getting into the Hall of Fame. It opened my eyes up to things don't always end up the way they should. And I think everybody, even the distractors maybe of Bump Phillips, can say that that was a raw deal. It should never have happened. And I think the Houston Oilers would have bounced back, and I don't think we would have gone into the tailspin that we did had Bum Phillips been there.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that impressed me about Bum is the same thing. We had Mike Bass on yesterday, the old Washington Redskin DB, great player, played for George Allen, Vince Lombardi, and then Robert, Dan Pastorini, Greg Bingham. I mean, when they talk about great coaches, to me, great coaches are the ones when I ask players about them, and you can tell that the players knew that that guy cared about them.
Yep.
And I think that's what makes a great coach, because you can get anybody to do anything for you if they know that you genuinely love them.
Yep, and that is, I guess that epitomizes Bum Phillips, you know, perfectly. It really does. You know, him and Earl, they were like father and son. They really were. And it's because Earl recognized it. We all recognized it. That, hey, if we didn't have our own dads, this is the guy that we would love to have as our dad. And it just was, my vocabulary isn't big enough to describe, you know, what I think of Bum Phillips. He's just one of those guys that I guess is indescribable, you know.
Yeah, and he's a guy, even though he didn't win a Super Bowl, belongs in the Hall of Fame just because of what he brought to the game with the 3-4 defense, the stuff he did with Bear Bryant in Alabama. And, I mean, it drives me nuts when I wrote an article about how he was the greatest coach not in the Hall of Fame that hadn't won a Super Bowl. And, you know, people blow it up that he was just a guy standing there in a hat and he was too close to his players. They just don't realize what kind of impact he had on his players and the game itself.
Well, not only that, but the guy was intelligent. I mean, he was extremely smart. And, well, he had to be. I mean, like I say, he came up and revolutionized defenses, and he was so underrated because he had the cowboy persona, you know.
He was quiet. He wasn't boastful.
Right, exactly. And so a lot of people misunderstood him as being reticent and simply not, I guess, involved or the way that everybody thought they should be, or he should be. But, you know, it's like you said earlier, when enough players and enough people themselves start talking about Bum and the way that they remember him and the impact that he had, there's something there. There really is.
Yeah, and like I said, I've interviewed multiple players that played for George Allen, Vince Lombardi, Bum. Those are the three guys that stand out to me that – and there's no hesitation where somebody might be making it up that they're saying something nice about him because they're on air. I mean, you can just tell that they genuinely love their coach.
Absolutely. You know, no, I don't think it's a put on. I really don't. And sometimes you can start to immortalize a guy, you know, beyond his reputation. But in this instance, like I say, well, I'm honest. You know, he's the second best coach for me. My high school coach influenced me the most and was by far the best coach I ever had. But Bum Phillips is right there with him. So
with all that happened with Bum, you were with the Oilers 81 through 84, 85, I believe.
Yep.
Was it tough for you to leave the Oilers after the 85 season?
Things had started to change. Jerry Glanville took over. Well, you know, really, I think things started to change drastically when Lat Herzog became general manager. And he was a guy that politics, that's when I start talking about politics and football, I think that's where it all started, was with Lat Herzog. And I'm known as a guy that doesn't pull punches, and I don't mean to be mean, and I don't mean to be disparaging to people, but that was a pivotal point, I think, with the Houston Oilers and who Ladd surrounded himself with and the coaches he put in. And it just, it kind of took a downswing. And then when Jerry Glanville became head coach, you know, I didn't fit into his plans, and they had other players that they wanted to go with. And, I think time tells. You don't hear much said about Ladd Herzog. You don't hear very much said about Jerry Glanville. And, you know, history kind of weeds out the true, well, I guess I should say it differently. History proves the good coaches. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And let's face it, the unfortunate circumstances are if Bum would have did what he did and acted like Jerry Glanville doing it, he'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, more than likely, probably. Yep.
All right, so what's your opinion of the way the NFL takes care or doesn't take care of its retired players?
Well, you know, I think they took advantage of players earlier on. I think that the politically correct movement has probably changed that a little bit. Players are very well taken care of now, from my viewpoint. I think that they could go back and maybe rearrange the pensions and that a little bit, but which they have done. You know, I'll give them credit for that. They have done that a little bit. But I've always said this. I believe this going to my grave. No one put a gun to my head to play football. It was my choice. And if I didn't like it, I could leave. And so I don't think any player really has any ground to stand on if they're complaining about the way things are. If they want them different, we can fight for something different. But like I say, nobody put a gun to my head to play football. Nobody put a gun to anybody's head to play football. We all chose to do it. And so from that standpoint, you know, we all wanted to be treated like men. And we thought, quote, in parentheses, we thought we were men, you know.
Yeah.
We were just overgrown boys at the time. But, we had our own destiny in our own hands. We did not have to play the game. So I have no time for players that are blaming the NFL for their woes. Yes, I think things could be done differently, but fight for it. You know, don't disparage the owners. Don't disparage the game because you think that maybe you weren't treated the way you should be, you know.
Yeah. All right, so what are you doing these days since you've retired?
Like I say, after football, I came back and worked with my brother-in-law at the lumber yard here in town. I grew up in a small town about 2,000 here in Iowa, and I worked with him for 20 years, and then my back started giving me problems. And even though the majority of my job was buying lumber, I still had to go out and help in the alleys, you know, load some trucks because it's a small lumber yard. And I got to where I couldn't do that, and a couple years after I retired from the lumberyard there, I had a couple back surgeries. My back's fine now, but so I did that for 20 years, and then after that, when I retired there, I ran for county commissioner. We call it supervisor here in Iowa, but one of three elected officials that runs the county's finances, and so I've been doing that for the last 8 years, and just enjoying my grandchildren. Got 8 grandkids, and finally got 3 granddaughters. We had 3 boys.
Yeah.
And so I
have a daughter who's like 21, Mike, and having a daughter can be overrated from the ages of 13 to 20.
I've been told that, yep.
Yeah, they're really rough. You know, they're daddy's girl until they're like 12 or 13, and then all of a sudden they don't even know who you are anymore.
Yep, yep, you bet. Yep. So.
Doesn't happen as bad with boys, so.
Yep.
But, hey, it was really an honor having you on the show. Would like to have you back some other time if you want, maybe a different topic even. And actually, I wouldn't mind doing a show just on Bum Phillips, have 3 or 4 of his old players come on and just reminisce and talk about him.
You know, that would really be a show, I think. And, you know, if you got guys like Brazil and Bingham and Pastorini, especially Earl Campbell. And like I said, when I get off here, I'll – I'll give him a buzz, and yeah, you got to get Earl on the show. But that would be a great show if you got guys like that, and you could just reminisce. The stories that would start coming out if you had three or four guys together would be enlightening. Let's put it that way.
Well, and I can tell you, I mean, I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, live close to Cincinnati, but I had an Earl Campbell jersey in 1979, and, you know, I knew the Bengals weren't going to win anything, so I had to have a team to cheer for in the playoffs. But, like, the 78 Monday night game with the Love You Blue, the song, I mean, Dan Passeri, Robert Brazil, yourself, Greg Bingham, I mean, that team, even though they weren't my team, was my team when it got to the playoffs. Even before that, I mean, I have to admit, I did cheer for the Bengals to beat y'all, but that was futile anyways because Earl Campbell ran for 200 yards and three touchdowns every time he stepped on the field against the Bengals. So, I mean, outside of the Bengals, that was my favorite team of all time. That's why I try to get as many Houston Oilers on there because I do think, as you said, the connection you guys had with that city for that period of time from probably 77 through 1980, 81, I mean, there's hasn't been any other connections like that. You might have, like, a city in Denver in 1977 one year where it's like that, but you rarely see where it carries over for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. We were family, you know, and that's the way we portrayed ourselves, but that's the way it truly was. I'll give you a good example, and this will be my final story. When I was a rookie, and this wasn't because of prejudice, but there was a white bus and there was a black bus, and out of choice. And I think it was the Kansas City game, if I remember correctly, but I was walking out and I was getting on the bus and I wasn't paying attention. And I got on the black bus. And they all started yelling at me, and J.C. Wilson especially says, "What are you doing on this bus? Get off here!" You know, I won't use the invectives, but, you know, but it wasn't from a prejudice standpoint. It just was a fun way of treating each other, you know. And not granted, there was, you know, we mixed on the buses, but for the most part, it just was a fun way of treating, you know, sometimes a difficult situation in life. And you know, I will never forget J.C. Wilson yelling at me, "Get off the bus, Mongo, you're on the black bus," you know.
But once again, Mike, anytime you want to come back on, I really like the idea of the Bum Phillips show, basically, and we'll have to talk about that. And if you could get us Earl, that'd be awesome, too. But I really appreciate you coming on. I want to remind everybody to check out our sponsors, Gridiron Mo, SteelbergBox.com. Sorry about that, Mike. But
no problem.
They gave me a little bit of money.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a Bengals fan. I hate to say it just as much as you hate to hear it. But I want to remind people to check out our shows coming up, TheGrillingTruth.net. You can also listen to us on Spreaker and on iTunes, Stitcher. Shortly we'll be on iHeartRadio, but tomorrow night we'll have former Cardinals offensive lineman Lewis Sharp, who was a three-time Pro Bowler. So make sure you check out all of our shows. We'll also have our Boxing Weekly show, which we will have Kermit Cintron, former welterweight champion of the world, who's going to be on with myself and Jeremiah Presser to preview this weekend's Tim Bradley, Manny Pacquiao pay-per-view fight. And I guess about it. We got Blaze Winter next Wednesday night, but check out thegruelingtruth.net. So for Mike Stensrud, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening where the legends speak.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why didn't you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
Mix and match an Egg McMuffin, Sausage McMuffin with Egg, or Sausage McGriddles. Enjoy any two for just $4. Prices and participation may vary. Single item at regular price cannot be combined with combo meal.